It's the Security Weekly News, episode 257. I'm Doug White, and it is Friday on the week of 13 November 2022. We've got our Métis pirate booty, phishing kits, CSC, Hive, HHS, Z Library, Iran, FTX, and more on the Security Weekly News.
This is Security Weekly, for security professionals by security professionals.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
It's the show that keeps you up to date on the latest security news twice a week. Your trusted source for accurate security information and expert analysis. It's time for Security Weekly News.
How is your business staying one step ahead of cyber criminals? Secure your email, applications, network, and data with Barracuda. Protect your business and go from zero to security in no time flat. Whether your team is working in one location or many, Barracuda has solutions that are easy to buy, deploy, and use. Learn how Barracuda can protect your business against ransomware, phishing, and other cyber attacks. Visit securityweekly.com/Barracuda. That's securityweekly.com/Barracuda. Barracuda, your journey secured. All right, so we're trying out a little bit of a new format on Fridays, which is really not really new, actually, but be sure and let me know what you think. So, yeah. Well, you remember the good old days when people put whole copies of movies and television up online and you could stream it all for free? I mean, the features were sometimes shot with handheld video cams in movie theaters, or, you know, they were like ripped off of old VHS tapes. No, neither do I. But anyway, the Spanish police led an investigation and identified a pirated stream site, which they never identified. I'm sure we could figure it out. But they never identified this site. But apparently, they were distributing content from 2,600 different TV channels, had 23,000 movies, and about 500,000 users. I mean, that's a lot better than what I'm getting from Hulu. You know, I mean, like, wow. But anyway, four operators were arrested in Malaga. So, and I mean, like, really? Four people were running this? I'm like, and it's outperforming Disney Plus. But I shouldn't, if you bash Disney, like mice show up at your house and drag you off somewhere. But anyway, all the streams of content were apparently obtained. This is how they did it for so cheap. They obtained all the content because they used stolen or cracked accounts. Plus, they actually were subscribing to content and restreaming it. I mean, I'm amazed people aren't doing that because, you know, if you did that, I mean, it is illegal, so don't do it. But I mean, if you actually could stream it, capture it, and then restream it, which would be better than those old handheld video cameras people used to walk in a theater in Times Square with, and sell those on VHS tape. But law enforcement found 10 admin panels that were connected to 32 streaming servers that were located all around Europe. Now, how they were paying for this, I don't really know. It didn't say if there was a subscription fee to this or how they were actually funding 32 streaming servers and all this stuff, but they had a pretty good setup and they never did name it. But the complaint came from the Alliance for Creativity back in 2020. And so ACE, you've probably seen that on movies and things, but that's an organization that handles that. And that was what triggered the investigation. So I'm sure we'll see more about that later. A report from Akamai said that a sophisticated phishing kit has been being used to target North Americans since the middle of September. The kit uses lures which focus first on Labor Day, then Halloween, and I'm presuming now Thanksgiving and probably already Xmas because, I mean, I was seeing Xmas decorations before Halloween, and it seemed like there was a lot of confusion down at like Home Depot where they were trying to shuffle around the different inflatable things, you know, and they've got turkeys and Santas and, I don't know, Krampuses and all these other things, and they're all in a big giant pile trying to be inflated, and it looks like some kind of incredibly twisted pornography. But we won't get into that. The primary lure in this one is an oldie but a goodie called Holiday Specials. Note, stores have been using this lure since they were selling slightly used rocks to Thag back in August of the Paleolithic Age. But regardless, the emails target top brands and stores, and they offer a chance to win a prize. Wow. And now how much would you pay? But the links don't trigger alerts, apparently, because they have a whole bunch of misdirections in them, and they have URL shorteners that conceal all the domains that they're using. So, you know, if you're not paying attention and you suddenly see, you know, that you just won a free shotgun at Dick's Sporting Goods, you might click the link. And so that, of course, what they're doing. When you visit the site, and imagine that, you win the prize. Like, you have been, you know, nominated to win a free shotgun. And you click it and go, guess what? You won the prize. So they put a five-minute timer up there. But if you don't claim it within the next 5 minutes, it's all going away. No more free shotguns for you. But the brands included Dick's, Tumi, Delta Airlines, Sam's Club, and Costco. I mean, obviously, they can add others to these things. Each victim has a unique URL landing page. So they're another way that they're obfuscating and getting around all the sensors. It's a pretty good story. It's got a little bit of technical detail in it, but it's a pretty good story to send out to your people. Or I would advise you, you know, as we enter the season of consumption, you probably should and write a warning to all your people so that they're not clicking these things, because it is very, very it's a very, very big problem. And it, like I said, it's a good time of year to remind everybody that almost everything is a scam. Am I cynical? Yeah, I'm probably cynical. I don't know. Yeah, it's my holiday spirit. Is like, yeah, I'm more of a Krampus fan. CSC, a domain registrar, reported this week that 3 out of 4, or 75%, and they had so many statistics in the first sentence of this, I was like, wait, if you multiply this times this, you actually determine the date of the end of the world. 3 out of 4, or 75%, of the Forbes Global 2000 companies have implemented less than half of all the domain security measures that were recommended. Wow. And now, if you don't know, the Forbes Global 2000, there's all these different, you know, you've heard of the Forbes, you know, what, 500 and the Forbes 10 and all these things. The Forbes Global 2000 is based on four metrics: sales, profits, assets, and market value. So this company said that domain-based message authentication had increased by 12% in the last year. So that was, I guess, a good move. But that security measures, and that was, of course, caused by phishing. But security measures like registry lock, DNS redundancy, DNS security extensions, and cert authority authorization saw very limited increases despite a large increase in the attack surface. And all those things are things we've all talked about or heard about at various points in time that you're not doing to protect your domains. CSC went on to say that all the companies need to make securing legitimate domains while monitoring for malicious domains a bigger priority. Of course, they're a domain registrar and they're probably selling products for this too. But I mean, it is a good point that, you know, your domains may be being usurped and you've got, you know, DNS poisoning and all that stuff going on. So, you know, you've checked all this in your organization, right? I mean, you have, right? I hope so. Another joint statement from CISA, the FBI, and the Department of Health and Human Services, and that's a bit ironic, but all these agencies issued this report, and they issued a warning to the healthcare industry about Hive ransomware. Now, all of us have heard of Hive, I'm sure, but as of this month, Hive attackers have exploited more than 1,300 companies globally, and they've earned about $100 million in ransom payments. So they're obviously doing pretty well, better than Twitter. 6 months ago, Health and Human Services warned about Hive, and I probably reported on it. I don't remember. I'd have to go look. But they reported that Hive was being particularly aggressive in attacks on the healthcare sector following an attack and outage at Partnership Health Plan back in May. Hive first appeared back in August of 2021, and they struck Memorial Health Systems and it ended up taking their emergency care unit and all this stuff. They were having to divert patients, and it was a big deal. Hive published, after that attack, 200,000 patient records that were stolen ahead of the attack. So this was one of those early incidents of double extortion. Hive basically uses, I was reading the article. It sounds like Hive uses just about everything to do this, but they said, you know, they use RDP and VPNs and other remote connections that don't have multi-factor. So those are the obvious easy vectors, but they also use brute forcing. They use exploits. They've used multi-factor bypasses in vulnerable Fortinet servers and on and on and on. The article goes on to say that the use of phishing emails and exchange server flaws. So basically they're using everything that's out there. I mean, it's like the attackers are just basically exploiting whatever they can exploit. The alert warns that all organizations, but especially healthcare and public health organizations, should implement the report's recommendation to reduce your attack surface as soon as possible. So, okay. So wait for the next story then. This is the next one. Okay, here we go. Ready? Okay, I could say medice curate ipsum, and if your Latin is rusty, that means physician, heal thyself. I think that's from the Bible. It's actually from the book of Luke in the Bible. And yes, I've read the Bible, and it didn't burst into flames in my hands, although I did wear gloves. But regardless, apparently, the Department of Health and Human Services issued another report. So this is the same bunch, right? The HHS issued another report called Top Management and Performance Challenging Facing. Top Management Performance Challenges and Performance Challenges Facing HHS. And it had a cybersecurity section. And the Office of the Inspector General, which is called the OIG, had said that HHS has taken steps to improve its security posture, especially after they were required to do so by the May 2021 executive order issued by President Joe Biden, which required them to do this. So they did it when they were required to do it by executive order. But before that, well, who knows? But HHS, and the report went on and said, HHS has struggled to meet the challenges and scored the very British score of not effective. I thought it would be better if it was not at all effective. Not at all effective. But they scored not effective, which is a pretty bad grade. I would like to give students that grade. Not effective. But and not effective is apparently in the Federal Information Security Modernization Act, and it's called FISMA, and that is a metric, and it has not effective. It's a pretty reasonable one. It just sounds very British to me. But anyway, OIG said that HHS failed to meet the managed and measurable maturity level for all five elements, according to the DHS and FISMA guide. They said that HHS struggled with its supply chain risk management and that risk management was not yet at a managed and mature level. HHS is trying to correct these problems and be in compliance by, wait for it, the end of fiscal year 2024. So, you know, they're sending out warnings to the healthcare industry, but, you know, it's definitely a physician heal thyself kind of problem. But it sounds like maybe they should read that other article I listed first and do some of those things. But the report show, here's the catch, and this is why they can't do it. The report shows that 24 of the 28 National Institutes of Health are funded by Congress, which that in and of itself is a nightmare, and they administer their own budgets. So all of you can probably easily imagine what that must be like when they try to actually give them guidance. And, you know, the Congress is telling them what to do. They're telling you what they're going to do, and on and on and on. Yeah. Two Russian nationals have been accused of operating Z Library now. According to an unsealed indictment, the two residents of St. Petersburg, Russia, ran the site between January 2018 and November 22. Which allowed people to download academic books and papers. Apparently, the site was very popular with students, and I asked some students, and they were like, oh, yeah, everybody uses that, because you can get those $300, you know, biochem textbooks for free. The two were arrested in Argentina. It didn't say why they were in Argentina, but they were in Argentina back early in November, and the request to Argentina was from the United States, so apparently they knew they were there. The U.S. also took down 250 different domains that were associated with Z Library and seized all their assets. So, I mean, you know, I see both sides of it. I mean, I had a couple of textbooks that I wrote during my career, and it's a kind of chicken and egg problem. I mean, the publishers make the books really expensive because the minute their books are released, new books are sold, but then they get resold. You know, how the bookstore buys your books back and then sells them again, and the authors don't get any of that money. So the authors only get royalties on the first few semesters, maybe, that the book is out, and then your royalties just go through the floor, because I remember that happened to me, and I was like, what's going on? I was like, my royalties just dropped by like 90%. And he was like, oh, yeah, the book's been out for two terms. It's like, now it's all used books and you won't get any more. So, you know, then they say we'll jack the prices up on the new one. But I mean, I get it. You know, when every book costs $150 and you have classes requiring four books, it can get a little out of hand. I mean, believe me, I know this. My daughter's in school. But anyway, the whole place is down for now. So you'll have to go back to the good old university bookstore until somebody opens a new one. Yeah. It's currently unclear what may happen with Twitter. Elon seems to be sort of trying to get it to fall into chaos, or I'm not sure what the goal is. You know, people are leaving the platform. Elon's shouting things on Twitter like, the floggings will continue until morale improves, and arr, matey, we'll keel haul any swabby who don't want to work in the office 80 hours a week. Oh, and I'll be on my yacht. No, I've got to stop that. All right, I'm going to cough. Yeah, that's what smoking cigars will do for you. But a lot of people are worried that they will leave Twitter, you know, on their own recognizance, or that Twitter will simply fly into the proverbial picture window and bash its little bird brain in before being picked up by a cat and brought in and put on my face in the middle of the night. That didn't really happen, but it might. Anyway, this article that I put in has instructions for how to save off all your tweets if you want to. And so you may want to distribute this before you start getting requests about it or have to deal with it yourself. So it was a handy article that has a nice, you know, plain English explanation of how you can save all your tweets off. Well, my threat of the week, which we are doing still, my threat of the week is going to be the mesh. Which I know that doesn't mean anything like most of my threats of the week. But I think if we look back at networks in 1985, we got this really clear threat surface, right? I mean, when I was managing stuff back then, we'd see it, and there's the threat surface. And, you know, the three people that were connected to the printer were pretty easy to manage because you go, hey, Steve, what are you doing over there? Like, no, don't do that. But today, we still haven't quite grasped, I think, as network administrators and security administrators, that everything is becoming interconnected. I mean, I think we know that, you know, like up front. But deep in our brain, we're still living in that I control this world. You know, I mean, I am. I mean, I still feel like, you know, I have some kind of control over this network. But I think my, you know, out front of me in my eyes, I'm going, yeah, but maybe not. And I mean, all of us are connected to Wi-Fi. You know, everything's connected to Wi-Fi. But there's a myriad of connections on those networks going in all kinds of other directions from all other directions. So back in May 2022, a study showed that despite the pandemic and the chip shortages and the supply chain foofaraw that had been going on, the number of connected devices had grown 8% in 2021, which is a lot. And it was expected to grow 18% in 2022. And that by the end of this year, they were expecting there to be 14.4 billion, with a B, IoT devices in use. And that may be light. Their expectation was, and in the study, was that by 2025, and they just kind of did a simple, you know, extrapolation on this, but that there would be 27 billion connected IoT devices. Think about that. There are 4,294,967,296 possible IPv4 addresses, theoretically. It's really more like 3.7 billion public addresses, but you know, you get the idea. So in a couple of years, actually already, IoT will, you know, is far outnumbering IPv4 addressing. And not that that matters. I know, it's not about that. It's not at all about that. I mean, the current estimate of the world's population as of yesterday was around 8 billion humans. Now, you know, I mean, of course, that all leads to the discussion of IPv6 and so forth, which has 2 to the 128 possible theoretical addresses, which is a very large number. And you know, and that would be something good to come out of IoT. But think about it. I mean, all those devices want to talk, all of them. They want to talk to each other. They want to talk to their home base. They want to talk to you. They want to talk to cloud-based services. And like I say, they want to talk to other IoT devices. And we're getting to the point where they're all talking to each other, even if they're internalized. But they may start talking to each other. So maybe your devices at your home pretty soon are going to be talking to your neighbor's devices at home. So your Ring doorbells are sharing information about what's going on. And not, I mean, I don't even know that that's all a bad thing. And I'm not trying to say it is, but I'm really concerned about it. But I mean, like your Ring doorbell right now, if you have one, I know some of you are like, hell no, I don't have one. I got a good old fashioned hammer and a bell out there that you bang on. But I mean, I get that your doorbell is talking to your Wi-Fi. Your Wi-Fi is sending that signal somewhere. It's talking to your mobile. It's talking to your desktop. It's talking to however many people are accessing the stream from it legitimately. or illegitimately, and it's uploading video to Ring headquarters and storing that, you know, wherever that is. And it's also checking in with some other component of Ring, which, you know, is owned by Amazon. It's checking in there to see if there's updates for the doorbell, if there's any changes and so forth. And then, of course, a lot of them are now connected to law enforcement. They're connecting all. And then, again, it's really useful. There was a whole bunch of, you know, some like, you know, Nazis were running around in Rhode Island the other day distributing anti-Semitic literature. And, you know, guess what they're doing? They're reviewing all the Ring doorbells to try to catch those evil bastards. But, you know, I mean, so I'm not, again, I'm not opposed to all this. I just am concerned about it. You know, my stove does this. It's constantly talking to the home base to see if there's any updates. And then the home base sends me an alert and says, oh, you need to patch this on your stove. And it sends information about probably about what I'm doing, if I'm cooking something and so forth. My refrigerator sends me updates about how much water it's dispensed this month, literally, and how many times the door was open. And it praises you for water, not so much for opening the door. So I get a little note that says, like, you drank this much water this month, but you opened the door too many times. Like, you know, back off that. Try to open the door less, you know, and I'm like, okay, Mom. But, you know, I mean, I can ping my refrigerator. I mean, it's out there. I mean, it's all kind of nuts. So back to the main story for this. So this article was basically talking about something that we all understand, Log4j or Log4shell, depending on how you want to call it, and how some Iranian hackers working for the government of Iran exploited Log4shell, broke into an unpatched VMware Horizon server, and deployed Eximerig, which is a crypto miner. I was like, whoa, so Iran's just like doing crypto miner implantations now? I was like, I don't think they were like broke, but maybe, I don't know. But I mean, you know, I mean, Eximerig, I was really sort of stymied by this. It was like, so that the Iranian government is backing people to plant crypto miners. But the point of all this, the system they hacked into was called a Federal Civilian Executive Branch, which is FCEB. And I actually was like, what is that? I remembered it after I looked at it. But this was described by the FBI and CISA. They didn't say which one. Now, initially, I was like, what is FCEB? But then I went and looked it up, and it's a list of executive branch organization, which is the Office of the President of the United States. It's underneath the White House, and it has a long list of things that are subject to the authority of CISA. Things like the Defense Nuclear Facility Safety Board, the Department of Energy, the Department of Justice, the Federal Trade Commission, and so on. Pretty much everything you hear of. It even got down to the Denali Commission, and I was like, what the hell is that? And I did look it up because I wanted to tell you. And it's not the Illuminati. That was what I first thought. I was like, there it is. I got them. I got the Illuminati. Right there they are. The Denali Commission. It got to be them. I know it is. But it was not. It was some office that provides utilities and other infrastructure to Alaska. I mean, why is everything you research about the government so boring? I mean, I think that's why people go off on these wild conspiracy ideas anyway, right? I mean, it's a lot more fun to think that the Denali Commission is arranging for streetlights in Girdwood. Then it's not as much fun as to imagine a secret underground Denali vault with secret documents which prove that Hillary Clinton is actually the zombie remains of William Howard Taft come back to life. I mean, which story is going to get more views? You tell me. But anywho, the point is that all these federal agencies, and there were 101 on this list, and I did count, you know, is just a top layer. All these things are interconnected. So they have network connectivity, they have interconnectivity, they have interagency connectivity, and I mean, you know, let's toss about 27 billion IoT devices in the mix just to keep it all interesting, especially when like 20 billion of them will be made in the People's Republic of China. I mean, think about that. Remember Augustus De Morgan and Jonathan Swift, great fleas have little fleas upon their backs to bite them? Yeah, you can tell he lived in the 19th century, right? But think about it. If every light bulb, Lucas Triangle Sandwich Machine, Valve Controller, and Thermostat, not to mention your own personal micro drone swarm, keep those pesky fleas at bay with Dr. Lou's guaranteed no more stinging sensation anti-flea and tick micro drone. Also prevents scabies, squeegee bums, and animals not larger than a Rottweiler from approaching you closer than 1 meter. Well, suddenly, all these agencies are going to be filled with millions of IoT devices, if they aren't already. Now add all the sub-agencies. Have you ever seen these things? You can tell them, our military friends. You want tacos on base? Well, guess what? The great subcontractors have little subcontractors upon their backs to bite them. Can you imagine the layers of networking that are going to be necessary in the layers of security when everyone has at least one drone sitting on their shoulder, like those little guys in Mad Max or that pirate, you know, with the parrot? Like, arr, matey. Yeah, I mean, and every little drone has another little drone to service it, because my parrot drone that I walk around with has got to have a service drone to, like, provide it with energy. And so the little other, yeah, you get it. And all the service drones have gained sentience. Now, imagine the advisory that hits it says there's a flaw in bootlang. That's a language I made up. That is a library used in 90% of all the bots, and it's if it's disabled, they may lose attitude control and decide to get all uppity and kill everybody. Now, the Denali Commission takes care of all its bots and blocks all the ports and reports in like a good little government commission, but SID's unique prawn sandwiches, drone delivered, bot insured, for that fresh caught taste, didn't patch. Poof. The missiles are flying. Hallelujah. Did you get that reference? That's a book and a movie reference. I think we're going to have to start considering how we can really have some sort of patch status that is vertically and horizontally integrated, rather than just hoping that SID patches prawn drones. I mean, I could go on, but I think you're probably starting to get the idea. I love the idea of the future. I love the idea of all the drones. I want metalheads running around my property, so if, you know, some dog decides to poop on my lawn, it's like, yeah, we'll see about that, sucker. And you know, all the metalhead drones come running out of the little barns to chase that dog walking person away. And I don't have to sit on my front porch with a shotgun yelling at clouds anymore. But I mean, you know, supply chain's there, and whether we like it or not, and as it meshes, it's going to become a much, much vaguer and more difficult to secure problem. And it may become asymptotic to infinity at some point. I mean, just like, I don't know how you do this. I always did want to say asymptotic to infinity. But so start thinking about, how do we ensure patch levels, not just across our space, but across all the interconnected space, and build that into our zero trust models? Because one of these days, Rosie's going to be vacuuming out the bubble and get targeted by the Grand Fenwick malware, which then linked into Spacey Sprocket's border via standing VPN George left connected so Elroy couldn't look at porn. And oh boy, enough of that. It was fun though. And finally, good old billionaires. They keep us laughing. Yeah, I tells you. But, well, FTX filed for bankruptcy, and as part of that filing, provided a treasure trove of how not to operate a company, or a lemonade stand for that matter. This article I attached, which I thought you might enjoy, described the company, and the title of the article is nine batshit crazy things in this report. They listed all this nutty stuff, but the article described the company as being run like a ship of drunken sailors, which I think was an insult to drunken sailors everywhere, that they use shady and ill-advised behavior. And this quote from the new CEO of FTX, who presided over Enron after it fell apart, is a pretty damning quote. Never in my career, including at Enron, have I seen such a complete failure of corporate controls and such a complete absence of trustworthy financial information as occurred here. This situation is unprecedented. I mean, that guy was, he went and took over Enron after it collapsed. And if you don't recall Enron, it was a major organization that basically imploded due to bad business practices back in 2001. I mean, at this company, a lot of money's missing. The company was hacked just as they declared bankruptcy. Apparently, they were buying homes and personal items for employees and advisors and not even keeping up with what they'd bought, loaned billions of dollars to employees and Bankman-Fried, the founder of the company and who was also the CEO, and they didn't bother to keep records of all this. They couldn't even identify all of their bank accounts. Like, it's starting to sound kind of like me, you know, I mean, really, I mean, you know, so if you're rich on FTX, you aren't anymore. Sorry. But that's the news. Have a happy Thanksgiving next week. We won't have any shows for the holidays, so our crew can take a break from making me look sexy.